I was talking about why we're the way we are. You know, I ask us, why weren't we cannibals? And our reason for not being cannibals is simply we weren't raised in a tribe of cannibals. If we had been, we probably would be. And I even went so far as to say, why are we Christian? We're Christian because we were raised where Christianity is the primary religion. Now, that's a hard thing for some of us to accept. But remember, the thing that I'm trying to do is to help us understand. We can live our lives acting as though everything that we're doing and we are, we chose to be. And most of us didn't. Most of us haven't really chosen anything. Most of us act like our mothers and fathers. You know, it's just, that's the way we are. Each one of us lives by self-evident truth. I'm going to try to help you understand what I'm talking about when I say that. These are truths that, as we were youngsters, we learned from living. They're self-evident to us. Nobody had to explicitly tell us these things. From interacting with people around us, we learned these truths from the environment around us. I think Jesus talks about this. I think when Jesus says, if you build your house on sand, every time a storm comes along, it'll blow your house away. Now, we know that he's not talking literally of sand in a house. And what he is talking about is what I'm calling self-evident truth, the basis for all of our decisions in life. If it's no good, then even though your logic works perfect, your conclusions will be no good. If this is no good, with perfect logic, the conclusions you reach are no good. Okay? And that's what I'm calling self-evident truth, or you could call them first premises. When you get into a situation and you begin to make a decision, you start with some kind of premise. And this is where it's at. Your logic works perfect. You reach a conclusion. Okay? That's what I'm talking about. This is our self-evident truth. Okay, let me show you how we get that. I'm going to pick on David again. David, when David was 5, 6, or 7 years old, something like this might have happened to him. His mother's in the kitchen baking cookies, and she says to David when she's through, she says, David, these cookies are for Sunday. Keep your hand out of the cookie jar. And an hour later, she walks in, and David's up to his elbow in the cookie jar. David, what might your mom have done?
She would have told me not to do that.
She would have just said, not do it.
She would have probably hit me up.
God, it's hard to tell the truth, isn't it? It's just hard to do. I understand. It's hard. These are people that love us. But anyway, Mama would have punished you some way, wouldn't she?
Right.
Okay, whatever it was. I've had people tell me she'd have, when I woke up, and then I've had people, you know, there's all kind of responses. David learns a self-evident truth from that. Mama smacks him. And here's what he learns. When somebody bigger than you tells you to do something, you better do it because they can hurt you. Did you learn that, David, when you were a little teeny kid? And you still know it today, don't you? When you ride down the road doing 65 in a 55-mile-an-hour zone, you're looking in your mirror, aren't you? Okay. It's a self-evident truth. You never thought about this, did you, David? What I'm talking about right now has never been a thought in your head, but you've lived a life totally by this. You never thought of this right here at all. This right here is your thinking process. This is just, it's there unconsciously. You learned it. I mean, you learned it the best way to learn something, experience it. Okay? He learned it so well that an hour later, he walks in the room, and his three-year-old brother's up to his elbow in the cookie jar. What might you do to him, David?
Hit him.
Now, where did he get hit in his, where did he get to hit somebody that's in the cookie jar from? He got it from his mama. He learned it. It's a learned response. Okay? Most of us don't realize what our self-evident truth is. We don't even know it. The only thing we ever think about is this and this. Okay? What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a list of things that I'll bet you is self-evident truth in most everybody's life in this room. They're going to be diametrically opposed to Jesus. They'll be diametrically opposed to it. And so what I'm suggesting is if you want to solve the problem in your soul, if you want to solve the problem, this is what needs to be changed. And we'll just kill ourselves trying to get our logic and our conclusions to change, won't we? That's what we'll do. We'll go home and we'll try to do it by changing this. My logic must be working wrong. Now see, this is part of what I'm talking about when I talk about understanding. Let me read you a list that I've made here. And see if these aren't self-evident truths in your life. Now, some of them you're going to say, well, no, I know that's wrong. But don't listen to your mouth. What'll it do? It'll lie to you. It'll tell you you believe something that your actions will prove you do not believe. So what I want you to do when you have that happen in you, when I mention one and you say, oh, no, I don't believe that, I want you to observe yourself and see if you don't do it. Okay? That's what I'd like you to do. Here is a self-evident truth that's in most people's life on this earth. You can hate some people and love others. I'll bet you most everybody in here was taught that. You accepted it from your environment. You can hate some people and love others. Jesus says you cannot get love and hate from the same heart or from the same mind. Isn't that an awesome thought? You can... Beg your pardon?
Like most people, when you said this, most people, when you first started off.
I don't know. My first premise truth was, you can hate some people and love others. You can hate some people and love others. Most of us learned. How many of you ever saw the movie South Pacific? It's an American classic. Let me remind you of some words in it. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you're 6 or 7 or 8, to hate the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. And I know, listen, folks, we're all good people sitting here, and I know you're sitting there saying, I don't hate anybody. Oh, don't you bet on that, because that's what we're going to talk about today. We may not understand what hate is. You can civilize hatred. Okay. But Jesus says you can hate some people and love others. Now, who do you say he is? That's an eye for an eye. How many of us, is that a first premise or a self-evident truth in our life? Do you get even? See, I know in your mind you're saying, oh, no, I don't believe that. No, look at your life. Let me show you. Let me tell you some little ways. This is why I tell you this is an inward journey. Any of you ever been riding down the road and you got some sucker weaving in and out of traffic like this, and all of a sudden he gets caught over behind a car right here, and to weave in and out he's got to get in front of you, and you speed up to try to slow huh? To cut him off. Joe knows just what I'm talking about. You know why I know it, don't you, Joe? And I mean, you don't have to think about that, do you, folks? show that sucker. You understand? We do that, don't we? Or any of you ladies ever get mad at your husband and sleep on 18 inches of the bed with your back to him? Your self-evident truth says you got to get even. You understand? Okay. How about the most fit survives? Jesus wasn't very good at that, was he? The most fit may die at an early age. You understand? You get good out of people by force. That's what all nations are run under. Now, and I'm not saying that these things need to be gotten rid of. I'm saying that Christians, these are not the self-evident truth in Christians' lives. You force people into being good. You can never force a Christian act. As soon as force enters the picture, it's not Christian. Our church teaches that legislated virtue is vice. If you get what seems to be a good out of somebody by force, it becomes a vice because of the force. If you go to church on Sunday because you're afraid of going to hell, you're missing the point. Think about that. You can kill others, but not your own. Is that a self-evident truth? God helps those who help themselves. That's out of Poor Richard's Almanac, folks, Benjamin Franklin. Jesus seems to indicate that it is only when a person can't help himself that God helps us. Think about that. I'm going to tell you something. There isn't any effort in getting to God. That's one of our problems. We get into life and it's a contest. Even in religion, it's a contest. Did I say to this class yesterday about the song that I listened sung at a wedding that said, God is the simplest of all? Isn't that an awesome statement? See, we think God's complicated, don't we? It don't take an effort to get to God. That's one of the problems we have. We're putting forth all these efforts, things we're going to do to get to God. I tell you to relax, and He's there. Let me give you another way you can look at that. God helps those who help themselves. There's two worldviews. There's an individualist worldview, and there's a group worldview. The Catholic worldview is the group worldview. The group worldview says, this is what an individual says in the group worldview, what's best for the group. You understand? What does an individualist worldview say? What's best for me? And folks, that's competition. That's living life as a contest. Okay? And I'm going to tell you what, most of us, we don't know it. That's what Jesus hung on the cross said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Okay? Good things happen to good people, and bad things happen to bad people. And that's one of them that we'll all say, oh, no, I don't believe that. Well, have you ever insinuated to your kids that God would get them if they were bad? The God that Jesus revealed is kind to who? To everybody. It says, Scripture says it just like this, He's kind to the ungrateful and to the wicked. Now see, that's an old view of God, that God's good to good people and He's bad to bad people. Folks, and most of us live like that though. The one with the most servants is the greatest. Now, I know you'll say, oh, no. Folks, if Bill Clinton walked in this room right now, I'm through. Because everybody here jump up and going to shake his hand. Oh, okay, how about the Pope? Okay. Same thing, honey. Same identical thing. Going to shake, sit there and shake your head. It's the same thing. You understand? The big cheese walked into town. David's through. You understand? Or you could look at this in your little home life, you know. Somebody pulls up in front of your house in a big Mercedes and gets out all spiffed up. You beat him to the door. And a drunk comes walking up to the house. You beat him to the door too, but it's to lock the door and you go get in the bedroom. That's what I'm talking about. That's the spirit behind that. How about money will bring safety and security? And most everybody here say, oh, no. And folks, there's just a few people in this room. But there's enough insurance in here, you couldn't believe what you could do. And what do you have the insurance for? Keep you safe and secure. God, what if my heart goes bad? I wonder if we could ever get this frame of mind. If my heart goes bad, I'll die. See, Jesus came to reveal to us that suffering and death wasn't evil. How about that? Or, if it is evil, if you want to face it as though it's evil, then what do to evil? You don't resist it. We resist it, though, don't we? You know why? You know what? We'd do anything to get us a new heart to stay here a little longer. You understand? I wonder if we could learn to die. Boy, if there's any insurance agents in here, y'all are really excited about what I'm saying. But folks, you know that it's only about 5% on the earth that have any insurance, don't you? In other words, 95% don't have. Y'all know that, don't you? Well, it is, and it's only the rich that have it. It's amazing how we think everybody's got what we got. Yeah. There's not 2% of the people on this earth could have open heart surgery. You all know that, don't you? Come on. Yep. That's what I'm telling you. We need to understand some things. We need to wake up. Might makes right. I'll bet you everybody in here believes that. But you don't know you believe it. I bet you act out of that. Or the majority rules. You know something that I've discovered as I walk this walk? The majority is always wrong. Hello? The majority is always wrong. Now that's really backwards. My God, David, aren't you a good democratic capitalist? Folks, the majority of the people elect our officials. I guess they're making things better. Is there less loneliness in this world than there used to be in this country? Is there less fear? Is there less anger? Is there less violence? Well, the majority must be making some horrible decisions. You understand? And we're trying to reconcile those two folks. And it's really I don't think you can reconcile those two things. You can't reconcile him. Now, there's a way you reconcile him to the world right there. You're going to die. Okay. I'm not going to use any more of those. Every one of those I mentioned are diametrically opposed to Jesus. I could take scripture and show you where his words are diametrically opposed to every first premise that I just gave you, every self-evident truth. So let's ask this question. If this is a lie and your logic works perfect, what are all your conclusions? See, I'm not talking about telling a lie. I'm talking about living one. Our whole life becoming a lie. Every decision you make is wrong. How about that? Every decision. I'm not talking about hitting it once in a while and missing it once in a while. I mean, as long as this right here is wrong, every decision you make is wrong. To do the right thing for the wrong reason is the greatest treason. You'd be better off just to be doing the wrong thing. Okay? Now that's serious, isn't it? That's serious. And I'm not talking about changing any of this. This is what needs to be changed. Love your enemy. No, you can hate your enemy, but love your friends. You understand? There's where the change needs to be made, right here. No, if you're going to love your friends, you're going to love your enemies. Because love don't pick and choose. Did his love pick and choose? That's what he revealed to us. A God didn't pick and choose. He loved the Romans. He loved the Samaritan. Jesus got killed for what I'm talking about. He was hated by his own people. And I'll get some good Catholics to go to hate me when I say God loves a Hindu, and a Hindu can go to God just like a Christian. They'll get mad at me. You understand? Jesus said those words. I never met anybody with the faith of this centurion. And folks, they killed him for saying things like that. And we say them today and don't even know it. Our life says it constantly. Because it's here. Okay? Now, what is the problem? Did God make us like this? What is mankind's problem? And I think Jesus answers that. And I'm going to have to do this in a hurry. So y'all just hang on. What is the problem? And I'm going to use two scriptures to help you understand what Jesus says the problem is. Most of us never get involved with what the problem is. We get involved with tertiary and some secondary issues, but never what the problem is. Everybody in here is familiar with Matthew 25:31. That's the last judgment scene. Two groups, sheep and the goats. When I was hungry, you fed me. Naked, you clothed me. And when I was hungry, you didn't feed me. Naked, you didn't feed me. And he said, these go off to eternal damnation. Those words are never put on the lips of Jesus for any other situation. Y'all know that? That it eternally damns you. Adultery don't eternally damn you. I'll go on and on and on and on. Okay? Lying, stealing, cheating, thieving. He didn't pick on those things. I'm not telling you they're right. I'm telling you he didn't use those things to say they were the problem. They are not the problem. They're the fruit of the problem. And in Luke 16, there is a parable of that same scripture, and I'm going to quote most of that one to you. This is the rich man and Lazarus. There was a rich man who dressed in purple and fine linen, and he feasted splendidly every day. And at his gate lay a beggar named Lazarus, who longed to eat the scraps that fell from the rich man's table. The dogs even came and licked his sores. The rich man died and was buried. The poor man died and was carried by the angels to the bosom of Abraham, and from the abode of the dead the rich man cried out, Father Abraham, let Lazarus dip his finger in water and come touch my tongue, for I'm miserable. And he says, he can't pass from you to him, nor you to him, him to you, or you to him. He said, well, then would you let him go back to my father's house and warn my five brothers where they'll not end in this place? And he said, no, they have Moses and the prophets. If they would not listen to Moses and to the prophets, they will not listen, even if one should come back from the dead. Now, folks, the guy that wrote this 50 years or more after Jesus is dead and has risen from the dead. If they wouldn't listen to Moses and the prophets, I'm going to tell you, people weren't listening then. They won't listen even if one comes back from the dead, not to what the real problem is. We're going to get caught up in other issues. So what's the worst thing that the rich man did to this poor man? Ignore. That's the worst thing he did to him, was ignore him. Y'all ever ignored anybody? That's the worst thing. This is what eternally damns a soul. This is what the man puts on the lips of Jesus, that eternally damns a soul. And I'm going to give you some words, a sentence, that I think sums this up. What our problem is, don't even focus on any other problem you got in your life. This is the problem of mankind. Apathy in the face of relievable human misery is radical evil. Apathy, lack of feeling. See, our soul has been fractured. The lack of feeling in the face of relievable human misery is the root of evil. And if you wanted to kill the tree, folks, what do you go for? The fruit, the limbs, or the root? Okay. The root of man's problem is lack of feeling for another. Now, I'd like to ask this question, and you answer it to yourself. Do you think God made us apathetic? I don't think so. Then how did we get this way? How did we get like this? Now, I'm going to share with you how I believe I got this condition. Okay? Because I can remember when this really got really important in my life. And y'all can tell how important it is to me. This is the issue right here. I wonder if anybody's ever went in a confessional before a priest and said, "Father, forgive me for I'm apathetic. Father, forgive me because I'm indifferent." No, we walk in and we pick all these fruits of being indifferent off of the tree, and nobody ever gets any better. Is the church getting better and better? I mean, is it getting holier and holier and got something more and more to show the world? It's not, is it? And I'm going to tell you, that's why people don't go to confession anymore. What was happening in there did nothing. You understand? People don't even go anymore. And if probably if you said, "Father, forgive me, for I'm apathetic," he'd probably say, "Oh, get out of here." Nothing wrong with that. You understand me? But this is what Jesus says the problem is. I'm going to tell you where it came from in my life. It came from fear. And I think I've got a way of explaining. Oops, sir. It came from fear. Apathy or another word you can use for this is indifference, and indifference and apathy is hatred. Y'all hear me? That is hatred come, and when the fruit of hatred is born, that's what the fruit is. Now folks, I know when you're fighting with people, that's one thing, but there's always hope when there's that emotion going on. And it's when the emotion dies, that's hatred. That is hatred. And see, we don't like to call that hatred. Now, I want to ask you, think about this. Are you apathetic towards, or do you see a nation that's apathetic towards its own children? Indifferent towards their own children, and they're saying, "What's the matter with them?" I'm telling you, we hate our kids, and the kids hate mom and daddy. But folks, you remember I said yesterday, if I was telling a group of cannibals there's something wrong with them, I'd probably be the next meal. Me and you are the same way. We don't want nobody telling, "Well, it's not, nothing's wrong with me." We're normal, see, because everybody around me, we have institutionalized apathy. You understand? We go to church, so. Go to church on Sunday. Beat the kids on Monday. What's the matter with the world? Sit down in front of the TV and click, "My God, what a hell of a place. Whoa, God, what's going on? Wonder what'll ever solve the problem." I'll tell you what'll solve the problem. Get up off your ass. Y'all excuse my language? Fear produces apathy. This is why we don't do nothing either, because we're afraid. Okay, now I'm going to ask you, I want you to participate with me.
you tell me the things that you learned to be afraid of from this high. And I'm primarily interested in kinds of people. And I mean this big. First person you learned to be afraid of. Somebody tell me. Your mama. There you go. Afraid of your mama. Come on, folks. Share it with me. Keep going. Y'all are doing good. Principle. Sister won't mind. Go ahead and say it. She understands. Older brother and sisters.